This is your one-stop shop for all things deals, discount and tips when it comes to buying, well, pretty much anything really. And on this week's episode, car tax changes. It's not a sexy topic, but you do need to know about it. The Royal Mail can get in the bin, as can their proposed changes to the second class letter service. And should companies discriminate against you because of your age? Legally, they can when it comes to paying you and also saying goodbye to you during redundancy. We explore that a little bit more a bit later. And finally, we have a fun topic that we can talk to you about, which is why Charlotte is particularly excited and dreading Race Across the World on the BBC next week. Welcome to False Economy.
Powered by Hot UK Deals, the UK's number one app for deals, discounts and freebies.
I'm Vic Slayton, consumer champion, shopaholic and occasional comedian. And joining me once again, the man, the legend, it is Paul Watson. How's your day been, Paul?
It's been long. It's been really long. We're recording later than usual. You won't necessarily get that if you're listening to this, but we are recording later than usual, and it makes what we're doing, frankly, quite heroic that we're managing to record.
Yeah. NHS workers, key workers, they're really feeling sorry for us right now. We are podcasting past 7 o'clock. What a bloody liberty.
Oh,
on this fake Tuesday, because full disclosure, it's just been Easter at the time of recording. The clocks have gone forward. I don't know what time it is. I don't know what day it is. I'm very confused. And as a result, yes, heroic that we are recording this podcast. I can only agree. And Charlotte Redding in the blue corner. How are you?
Very well. Very well. I started a new job this week. Woohoo! Which is exciting, but I've also started it on fake days of the week.
Ooh, yeah.
Bank holiday week. And I'm going through all those classic corporate online trainings at the moment, which are absolutely to die for.
Because nobody knows what their job is after coming back after a 4-day weekend, but you literally don't know what your job is. The pressure must be immense.
No, it's great. I got taken into the office and they were like, it's not normally this quiet, but everyone's on annual leave. It's like, lovely.
Yeah, brilliant.
But yeah, I'm good.
Ah, oh, well, that's good news. Charlotte, tell me what's changing in car tax.
It's going up.
We should just record you saying it's going up, and you can play that every time we mention bills.
Over to Charlotte with the data.
It's
things
going
got
up.
More expensive again. starting from the 1st of April, only fully exempt vehicles.
It was funny because I flagged this to Charlotte and she was like, oh, this actually affects me, which is why we're talking about it now.
Well, yeah, like technically, you know, by the time this will air, we're 10 days out of when this came into force, but, you know, it's not really due until your car tax is then due. But for everybody, it's going up, and only fully electric vehicles will remain exempt from the vehicle excise duty. The road tax or car tax. The increase for most people at most bands is between £5 and £10. Our guy, little Percy,
is back, by the way.
Back from the dead. Yep. You should call it Lazarus now, really.
So for the highest rate of tax, for the big diesel-y hogs of an engine that are pumping out the maximum emissions, you're going to see a £40 price hike. And that is for band M. But everything's going up.
That is true every week. One day, apart from energy prices, remember they were going down and we were very excited about it last week.
I know what you're thinking. What's driving these changes?
Do you know what I was? But I didn't want to say it because I'm too cool. What's driving these changes, Charlotte?
It's a combination of a shameless money grab,
of course,
in all honesty, and an effort to get us all to switch to, they always say it's for environmental reasons, don't they? But the reality is, it's a little bit of a money grab.
Oh yeah, ULEZ is making them so much money. And do you know what?
Absolutely.
They'll add £40 to everybody's tax, so they can't get the trains because you're priced out of the trains. You can't get coaches because they cost what trains used to cost, and they bloody coaches. And Ken Barlow owes like £1 million to HMRC. Are we chasing him for that enough? No, we're not. The actor, what? Ken Roach, the actor who plays Ken Barlow.
Sorry. What?
I know. I read about this recently and it's like, you don't want to be jealous or resentful of the rich, but apparently he might have to pay it because he wants to sell a house and they could seize the money. So he's finally going to stump up his tax. Like, presumably he's been paying like £1 a week off for the decades he's been in Coronation Street. I mean, he's not hard to find. He's literally there on the cobbles. Send an officer. Send an officer.
Yeah. Like, if you were, if you owed £2,000, they'd have sent the
bank. Oh, yeah, I had some terribly scary letters when I owed them, like, 10 pence. And is he just ignoring those letters? Look, he's like, yeah, not for me, thanks.
As you say, I will get you him very easily. Him, if you want me to round up him and Charlie from Casualty, I'll get them both knocked off within a couple hours.
We'll
I know where
a,
they'll be.
We'll book a cameo with them and we'll be like, please answer for why you haven't paid your tax.
Yeah. Oh,
have you got a strategy?
A
please share your tax strategy with us. Is it the same as Gary Barlow's? So yeah, pay your tax, Ken Barlow. Yeah, so that's...
It's a Barlow issue. Hey,
it's
a Barlow.
Barlow's. Gary Barlow also famously had a tax
and
strategy.
And they're tax-wise. Yeah.
Anyway, do you know who...
I love it. Strategy. The strategy being not to pay it.
Yes. Right? So, do you know what else can get in the bin with the Barlows? Royal Mail.
They absolutely can.
Now, I am a staunch defender, right? When I think about the post and how you pop it in a postbox and then overnight it goes on trains and planes and somehow it can get abroad for like £1. Honestly, it feels like magic to me, but they are testing me. I am a super fan and they are testing me because last week was absolute palaver. So I had something that was on special delivery, but I didn't feel very special because they didn't bother to ring the doorbell before telling me who was in the house that I was not in the house. I'll tell you who else is waiting for post. Charlotte.
I was waiting for my new work laptop.
Yeah.
Ooh, they sent that with Royal Mail though. That seems
but
trusting.
Royal Mail, special delivery pre 1 o'clock, on the same day that they'd neglected to ring the doorbell was the day it was due to be delivered. And then they genuinely lost it.
Oh.
I had to go, and thankfully, like, I the man I ultimately spoke to was very helpful, but I went to the delivery office where it was last tagged in. So it was tagged in as out for delivery, having been there, and just never went anywhere.
We waited
from
in on
there.
Saturday because they said it will be re-delivered on Saturday. They also put both our parcels on the same delivery note, which was very confusing. So mine was not coming until Tuesday. Charlotte's was allegedly coming on Saturday. So we had another day of waiting in. Then again, on Tuesday, just in case, and we finally gave in and Charlotte went to the Royal
Mail. Absolutely nothing.
Sought her item.
I went to the Royal Mail and I spoke to them, and the man had to get his manager, who I then very kindly convinced to just go and have a look. I sort of made them just go and look. He was like, well, it's not flagged as being here. I was like, well, you were the last people to see it. It's not been delivered to me. It's not been checked in digitally anywhere. Go and look. And about 15 minutes later, and after hearing much rummaging and conversation, they did appear with it. And it had become buried under other parcels and just was flagged as being nowhere. So kind of had I not, God knows how long it could have sat there.
Had you not come up with this amazing stratagem of having a look? They might have just been happy to let it sit there for a decade.
Well, it's not here. And you said it's not, you went and checked up there and they said it wasn't there either. Well, technically it's, I mean, I've had a look on the system and it's not here. And I was like, right. But hear me out.
I don't have it either.
The same system also says that it's out for delivery on Saturday, just gone. But they went and had a look, the age old method. I'm surprised they managed to see it, but they did, the two men.
No, and the stress of your new job, though, not having the equipment to go to work with.
It's a bad one, isn't it? Because you haven't built a huge amount of like trust up at that point and your laptop's already gone. It's like day one. Oh, yeah, that incredibly expensive thing gone. You sent to me, I haven't got it. It's not ideal, is it, really?
No. Thankfully, they were very understanding of the fact that it was Royal Mail and not me.
So, right, yeah, we've lifted up the Barlows, right, because we want Royal Mail to go right to the bottom of the bin. So we've temporarily lifted up the Barlows.
Where all that
they're covered
bin
in,
juices.
Barlows are covered in beans. They're really unhappy, but we're dangling them over the bin just to shove Royal Mail further in, because
Royal Mail deserves to be doused in bin juice for this. They are owned by International Distribution Services, and with, you know, changes and decline of usage and all these things, they're having to make big operational changes to save some money.
A lot of bills have gone online, you see, which isolates
they
people who
indeed.
Are not digitally savvy. So large amounts of older people and vulnerable people are unable to access their money anymore because branches are closing. And now maybe they won't get their posts in a timely manner.
Yes. So the proposed change is that second class posts will only be delivered every other day, dropping from being delivered potentially, you know, having a delivery like 6 days a week to going down to sort of only 3 days a week where second class post can be delivered. Again, this does only affect letters. Parcels are not included.
You pay money for those. But cash, I mean, generator.
Yeah. But a second class letter could only then be delivered ideally every other day. The reality is currently, I think I briefly saw the stats on this earlier. So at the moment, they are supposed to deliver a second class letter within 3 working days, something like 98% of the time is what they've sort of agreed to. Last year, they managed not even 90% of that. But, you know, if they go to every other day, this could then move to being perhaps 5 or 7 days that one is waiting for a second class letter. As part of this, this is in a drive to reduce the number of routes that they're running and the number of services they're operating. And with that, I hear you ask, may come some redundancies. Oh. And there's some lovely little quotes here about all those posties that they're going to get rid of. The company expects there to be no compulsory redundancies and fewer than 1,000 voluntary redundancies. And these will be ideally managed through what they have called natural turnover. So I would love to know what they're going to do with all of the posties that they are, you know, fewer than 1,000 voluntary redundancies for all those cut routes and cut services and fewer postal deliveries, essentially. And for that reason,
I'm out.
They can get in the bin. Yeah.
I'm out, yeah.
For that reason, I'm out.
Charlotte, we can finally talk about it.
We can finally talk about it. On this season 4 of Race Across the World, there are 2 participants, one of the couples that I know very well because it's my dad and his wife. They will be racing across the world. They have done the show and, yeah.
The oldest couple ever to participate. Yeah.
Oh, really? Are they generally pretty young then, couples?
I think they have a lot of sort of father and daughter, father-son pairings, mother and daughter, but typically they've skewed like the young end of middle age, so like 50s, I'd say.
Not sort of the retired couple. Yeah. Types.
And obviously, therefore, you are completely prohibited from telling us anything that could spoil.
I'd love to have the spoilers sworn to give, Paul. But the reality is, my dad will not tell us anything, and the man is a complete wind-up merchant. So I have absolutely no idea how it went, because he has joked that it's the best thing in the world and joked that it's the worst thing he's ever done. And I can't tell. I cannot tell when that man is lying and when he's just
having
having
watched
a laugh.
The show, both of things can be simultaneously true.
Both things can be true. I just, there are things I'm concerned about. You know, him becoming a national laughing stock, naturally, that's up there with real concern. A dramatic fall, I think, would be entertaining.
But you must, yeah, because you must know he's all right. So at least you'd have to be like watching, thinking, "Oh God, he's not going to be all right here because he's okay, right?"
I know. I mean, that's not a spoiler. To spoiler it, he's not dead. He didn't die.
Not spoiler.
He's not dead. Not like
he's alive. You're talking of him in the present tense.
I don't mean dramatic fall, like he's gone off a cliff, but like something really embarrassing, like basket of fruit up in the air, like his pants have fallen down and like the whole world's going to see his arse. Something like that I think could be pretty embarrassing.
But yeah, Paul knows about this because his brother Mark went on something called Bear Grylls the Island, and a lot of the press coverage did suggest that Mark had died on it.
Oh, it was awful. It's horrible. And you're only allowed to, like, you can send him a message.
I think I have seen the clip where he is convinced he's having a heart attack. And I'm
it's horrible.
It's one of the funniest things
I've ever
seen.
Knowing that he didn't die. Yeah.
Oh, God. It's so weird how it is, like, I'm not even able to find it funny in retrospect because it was horrible. They only let you send a message to him that will get read to him in an event of an emergency. Actually, my first boy was born while Mark was on the island. So they were allowed to tell him he had been born, but there was that, like, literally I couldn't get a message back about that, or like, you know, that was the extent to which they are locked down. Like, they took
it
so seriously.
And it did look absolutely horrific though.
Oh, and yeah, and it sounds like he went through like genuine hell. Like it was just awfully traumatic. And I have a lot of opinions about how he was treated and how the blasé way that they approached the health and well-being of the contestants on that show. Because honestly, I don't care what you're paying people or, you know, what the premise of the show is. You have a duty of care to people. And they, in my opinion, it was not cool. So, yeah, I hope it's not like that for you. But it was horrible watching that. I never could watch it on TV. It was just awful.
It's less about suffering, this one. But I think the assumption is with a lot of people that it's constructed and a lot of the situations are made for TV. But looking at that one that Mark was on... I didn't think you could fake that level of misery. You know, when you're discriminated against for your age, because obviously the oldest couple in Race Across the World, people probably thought they're not going to get very far. Are they right? I guess we'll find out together. But discrimination about your age, Paul, is rife in ways that you might not consider. Charlotte, tell us more.
We all know that minimum wage is tiered by age. So, you know, under the age of 18, under the age of 17.
Well, I didn't know that, actually. I sort of had a vague idea of it, but it's not been relevant to me for like 20 years.
So minimum wage changes as you get older. People under 18, as of literally a few days ago, so from the 1st of April, every year the minimum wage goes up. So under 18s earn just £6.40 an hour. It's okay to pay them that. But if you are 21 and over, you can earn £11.44 an hour. So usually where this is harshest, I think, is for people working in hospitality, where, you know, an 18-year-old regularly might work alongside doing exactly the same shifts as someone who's 21, 22, 23, earning almost twice as much. There's a lot of reasons for this, but what we discovered recently...
I celebrated a 2-year anniversary at work, and do you know what that means, Paul? I would get redundancy pay if the worst happened.
Wow. Yep. God, that day before that must have been a nervy day.
You have to do 2 years of service before you're entitled to any redundancy pay legally, which is so long.
Yeah, that's dreadful.
It used to be a year, and then they slowly just chipped away at it, and now it's 2 years, so... It's a white knuckler, you know, in times of economic crisis, because like the jobs that I typically do, like PR and marketing, they're lovely, nice jobs to have, but no one's going to die if they don't have PR. So not saying that I'm superfluous to my business, but it is nice to know that in the event of...
It's always marketing that gets cold first,
and they regret it. They will regret it, but...
Oh, yeah.
But, do not fire me. I am vengeful, but...
those are the statutory entitlements. So, I mean, an employer legally has to give you redundancy if you've been there 2 years or more. A lot of employers will give you redundancy.
So would
anyway.
I be riding that exciting wave of windfall?
Not for a couple of years. So what we discovered... is that statutory redundancy is also tiered by age, but in a really weird way. The statutory right, if you are under 22 and made redundant, is that you will earn half a week's pay for each full year you were there under the age of 22. Oof. Obviously, if you age into different categories in this time, but if you started at 18 and you worked there for 2 years, and then 2 years and 1 week into the job you were made redundant, you're entitled to 1 week's pay.
Oh, jeez.
Right.
That's
awful.
It is. Yeah. But if you were aged between 22 and 41, it's a full week's pay for each year. So you'd get...
2 weeks pay.
2 weeks pay.
2 weeks. Wow.
But weirdly, and I don't know how they decided this, if you are 41 and over, you get 1.5 weeks pay for each full year you worked there. So in a couple of years, yes, Vix, you will be riding that wave of free monies
for
if you made redundant. For a month and a half.
Wow.
It's completely mind-blowing. Like if you are under the age of 22 and made redundant, you will earn a third of what you would in statutory redundancy as if you were 41 and over. I mean, I sort of get it in terms of generally the risk that you have financially at that point. Typically, someone who's 41 and over might have dependents.
Remember when we used to buy houses?
Yeah, they might have a house and kids and pets and more responsibilities for which I think legally they decided that, you know, they should be entitled to more. But I had absolutely no idea this existed. And I don't think most people do.
That was an interesting but sobering fact that we found out about redundancy. So if you are trying to keep a little bit of a rainy day fund and you think your job might be at risk at any point, do not bank on statutory redundancy pay. Start trying to put something away if you can, because that will not go very far.
If your employer doesn't have redundancy pay built into your contract, into your policies, into your benefits, double check. But yeah, if you are relying on that statutory, you're screwed.
Because I'm guessing like there is no incentive to them to just be good people, right? So like they will pay the least they can possibly pay. But like as you say, in some contracts, is it built in from the off? And it might be something you don't necessarily check, is like what are the terms of your redundancy payments? So like it's definitely something I wouldn't think to look at, especially if you just got a nice new job and you thought, for example, you Charlotte, you just got a nice new job and you're thinking, oh, great. I mean, you don't necessarily think immediately, oh, I wonder how they'll treat me if they make me redundant. So I'm guessing it's something to check, I suppose.
It's something that I don't think a lot of people do check. Personally, I don't. I've never hugely considered it, but it's normally nestled in the contract somewhere or it's in your benefits. So it might be in amongst those periods where there's normally a clause about what notice periods your employer will give you and what you have to give your employer if you want to leave. And oftentimes you can find kind of something about redundancy in there, either that or if it's listed as a benefit, like a death in service.
But on the subject of getting a job, we've got to recommend getting a recruiter, because Charlotte's recruiter was absolutely outstanding and negotiated really hard for all the benefits and bells and whistles that you get. So if you're a nervy person and you're in a skilled occupation where there is a recruiter available, oh, they'll do the embarrassing, awkward things for you.
And I've always felt that. I've always felt that everyone needs an agent, basically, because it's so hard to negotiate for yourself, isn't it? Especially because you're in a vacuum too. Like, you obviously want a job. If someone's offered you a job, you clearly want to take it. And you are just sitting there on your own thinking, do I push on that? Do I do that? Am I being unreasonable? Will I just lose the job if I do this? And I think it's so hard to do that part for yourself because of all these different voices that kick in that basically tell you, be safe, don't rock the boat, take the job. You know, it's, and that's not great advice, is it, really? Because I'm sure if they've got to that point, this is when you actually have a bit of leverage, right?
But you can also find yourself,
I'm so bad at that,
in a vulnerable position. I think when if somebody's been out of work for a long time and they're like, they finally get offered something, they're going to bite their hand off for it, regardless of what that offer says. I think the fear of losing that, you know, light at the end of the tunnel is quite strong. But I think, you know, still go after the things you want. If you know you're going to need flexi time, it's better to talk about that up front at the beginning than, you know, try and work that in later on, that sort of thing. If you know that you're going to need these considerations or you're going to need, to a certain extent, these benefits in the role, go for them. Because otherwise you'll just leave.
And a recruiter gives you sort of plausible deniability, because in the worst case scenario, they're ringing every day, but you didn't ask them to ring every day to check the status of the application. They're doing it off their own bat. Like, oh, how embarrassing. I'm so sorry. Is he intense? Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't have...
Oh, all that nagging.
Wouldn't have dreamed of pushing it.
Because I'm just totally breezy. Like, I'm just, I don't care either way, you know. I've got loads of people beating down the door to give me a job, don't you? Yeah, because that's always the worry, is that thing of, do you chase? Do you look desperate if you chase? All those conversations that go around in your head infinitely, you just step out of all of those with a recruiter.
And it's free.
Yeah.
They get an extra fee. It doesn't come out of your salary. It's completely free. They help you with your application. They make sure your CV isn't rubbish. It's a really good free thing that you can have, like a little job concierge. So if you're not sure if a recruiter's for you, have a look, because it's a really hard market at the moment. You're not even getting replies back. Like, I'm hearing from so many people that they're sending out hundreds of applications and they're just not even getting a courtesy of a response. So... It takes a bit of the stress out of it. It's a tough market.
Can we also petition to have recruiters officially renamed as job concierges? Because I like job concierge.
And if you are in a slump, I was once in a job slump, and I went, I think it was something like 100 unreplied jobs.
Wow.
Job ad. And I was working really hard at them as well. I was like trying to personalise them all and all stuff. So I just thought, what would happen if I put as the Secretary General of the UN in my CV? And so I did. And I did get a reply to one which said that they thought I was overqualified. And I still don't know. To this day, I don't know if someone did that with a smirk on their face or if someone just looked at it and said, bloody hell, why does this guy want to work here? Because it was just like an admin job. I was like, I still don't know if today someone's there thinking that was the best joke that I've ever seen on a CV, but I couldn't say it, or if they were just like so dead inside.
You burnt out,
like,
yeah, Paul, after that all that responsibility. You just want an easy job. You just want to be a barista. You just want to want to chill out. You want to, when you finish work, you just want to go home. Because, like, it's hard to be a bar person or a barista, but no one is asking you to check your emails to see if anyone's ordered a drink at 9 o'clock in the evening when you've gone home.
Right. It was like it was genuinely, it was for a job that was like office admin or something. So it was like photocopying. And it's like, what
just
makes you think you
house
can do this? Well, and also I brokered a sort of fragile peace between North Korea and South Korea in my role as UN Secretary General. So I reckon I can probably do this photocopying.
It's the slow fur round.
I feel like we have settled that on that as the melody, and it does make me happy.
Yeah, do you get royalties on that?
All right, what a racket. Here on False Economy, we like to think we are the podcast of the people, and we know exactly what you're in the market for at any given time. So this next item is really relatable. How much does it cost to lay and build your own tennis court? You know, can you not be bothered to queue for Wimbledon? Have your own in your garden with all the space you've got. You're not using it. You've got acres. Now, this is the criteria for this is for an average ballpark stroke tennis court figure. This is the average. So it includes the big ones and the small ones. We've come to this. It's going to be a curveball, but I got these figures off checkatrade.com. Mm.
To build your own tennis courts, like a tarmac-y kind of concrete-y base thing.
Well,
right,
let me tell you what it includes, Charlotte. I'm glad you asked. The cost includes full surface, fencing, drainage and soakaway, the nets and the line marking.
The court. includes the court.
Paul, our sports expert, can you confirm, is this a complete set?
Is there anything missing? You're the sports
guy.
Sounds
like... just... I love that they're like saying the floor, the lines. It's like, oh, right, I get it.
Right, I'm going to say £65,000.
Oh, Charlotte's gone like...
Wow, that is... Yeah, you were much quicker on the up there. It made me think you've recently had a tennis court commission.
It's almost certainly true.
I was going to say 50 grand because it's the kind of amount of money that you think this kind of thing might be.
I don't know. That's why I was like, I feel like it's sort of somewhere between. I was thinking like 50, 75. Obviously, it's an average. Let's go in the middle, 65.
All right. Well, point Paul. It will actually cost you the bargain price of £45,000. Now, the tennis players are sold separately. They do not come with. Thank you, checkatrade.com. Yeah. Second item, Armina Legoland. Hey. My pun game is strong today.
I think
Armina Legoland. Yeah. We spoke about surge pricing last week and mentioned Legoland tickets in particular. So how much does it cost for an on-the-day ticket to Legoland Windsor?
Oh, God.
You've travelled to Windsor. You've rocked up. You're in the queue. You're just buying it like an absolute pleb. You've done no research on it. How much are you expected to pay? Who does this?
I've never been to Legoland, and I hate theme parks. I have no idea how much these things cost.
Well, that's the game, isn't it, Charlotte? Do you know what? Neither of you have installed a tennis court either. I don't know if you've noticed. So
this is going to be loads, right? Because I think when they sell them in advance, this is just for one. But I think in advance they're something like 40 quid for a day. And so I think they're going to absolutely gouge you for this.
So it's just a single entry, single person.
Yeah.
What a rip-off.
Oh, that's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. Making kids the same price as adults is
hideous.
That's such a con. Honestly, I think this... I reckon that I've never known anyone just rock up there and pay, but they will try and make that as expensive as possible. So I reckon... I'm gonna go
right.
70 quid. That's what I think.
Paul
says
70. Charlotte.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm like, there is no way they can charge that much.
As I said it, I was like, surely not. That just.
But if you're right, then people are going to take to the streets. But
streets of Legoland.
The streets. We'll take to those tiny streets.
The revolution.
And we'll wave our bricks around. No, we'll. It's got to be lower. It's got to be lower. I'm going to say 69. So
right, okay, that is cheating, Charlotte, and you know it. So if you're happy
it's part and parcel.
Stealing a point from Paul, completely set the tone for this pricing.
It's not cheating. It's a higher or lower game than the person who goes first.
I know, but...
Yeah, it's part of the game. I'm sure I do this too. Like, we both do. Okay, it's just being a professional.
Right, fine. I think there's no way it could be more than £60. Well, so I'm going to say 60.
I'm going to give you the point, Charlotte, but I'm not happy. All right? It's £68.
Oh!
Wait, so I said 69. Right. That's why you don't want to give it to me.
I feel like Paul was within £2 completely with no help. And then you just...
Yeah, I know. And I've accidentally snuck
you. You've really stolen that from
it. That is brutal.
60. I've absolutely thieved it. I do feel bad.
£68 for adult and child.
I mean, the real crime is that. How the hell can they charge that?
One adult, one child, nearly £140.
Yeah. We need the revolution in Legoland.
But do people pay for Legoland like people pay for Domino's? Like, you never pay full price and it's always with a voucher.
Well, there will be people that just turn up or that bring an extra person, probably.
Mugs.
Right, anyway, the third and final. So Charlotte, point Paul. Paul's absolutely killing it today on guesses.
He is absolutely killing it.
Yeah, but only one all. That's the game.
Yeah, but also emotionally, you are the winner of that second point.
I've just seen the next
and
one.
And I'm going to feel guilty about that.
Are you ready for another instalment of Charlotte losing her mind, trying to do quick maths?
No, stop it. Stop with this.
That's my drum roll. Dried ramen noodle packets. How much does it cost for 4,000 packs of 120 grams dried Nong Shim Shin Ramyun spicy noodles? How much?
Wait, how many? 4,000 packs. Did you say 4,000?
This is from orientalmart.co.uk, so it might not be the cheapest, but it will be authentic.
Okay, so I... am someone who buys in bulk.
That's the joke, Charlotte.
And
we get
am someone who typically buys noodles in bulk. Currently, in my spare room, are 48 packs of Mee Goreng noodles.
Okay.
That I bought on Amazon. But I feel like these are going to be more expensive.
Oh, is that fat? Oh, okay. That's quite a fancy. Okay. I actually had it down as kind of
It looks
budget.
Nice.
It's difficult to say what's budget and what's premium with instant noodles, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
It's all about the colour on the packet.
The packet is red, orange and yellow. They're from Korea.
Not helping me.
There are no reviews for this product yet. And they're sold in boxes of 40, as you correctly stated, Charlotte.
Oh, so it will be a 40 pack and then we're extrapolating that out. It's not like you can buy a 4,000 pack. That's what I thought it was. It's like, oh, I enjoyed this. I'm going to eat this forever. This is my question. This is actually a useful question. So are we assuming that because this isn't like a 4,000 pack, this is just loads of 40 packs? So we are just the price of a 40 pack and then we're timesing it by, shouldn't take me this long to work that out, 100, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm thinking, oh God, this is really stressful.
Doesn't have to be stressful. Just let Charlotte do it, Paul, and then go £1 more or less.
You know, right, I'm going to think of them being...
Maybe for the laugh, you can both write down your answer rather than one of you give away the other.
Do you know what's even worse, though? I've just dragged... the notebook I've picked up to do this in is my new work notebook. So at some point, I'm going to sit in front of someone. I'm going to pull out my notes from my serious job, and there's just going to be me working out ramen with a bunch of numbers scattered all over the page.
You're going to love my calculations. I don't think these will intimidate anyone, but I've settled upon a figure, and it's the most rudimentary calculation that has ever been made by a human being. It'll do.
We love it'll do.
Okay, have you got your paper ready to turn round then?
I have. This is not going to be like the countdown round, right? It's
just going to be... We are then going to have to say our answers, though, because this is an audio medium.
Yeah, no, of course.
All right, I'm ready.
All right.
Show me your numbers. £4,000 from Paul.
Now,
and
that's backwards,
Charlotte,
isn't it?
You've got...
£1,800.
Oh, shit. It sounds like you've got some information because I just
lower.
Went with...
Much lower.
I felt like they were a pound each. And then from there, now this would be difficult to follow, but from the bit where I thought they might be a pound each, I times that by 4,000 and that made £4,000 just to talk you through. You know, I know it's tricky.
I think I might have gone too low, but I'm working this out based on what I buy them on Amazon for. So I buy a 48 pack of noodles for about £16, but they are much lower quality, different flavour. So times in that up, but that is also a 48 pack, not a 40 pack. So I did a little bit working out, but yeah, I've come out to £1,800.
Right. So it's 3,264. So it's sort of in the middle. But I think Paul's taken it.
I don't even know.
They're such expensive. Oriental Mart is ripping people off.
I would need another round of calculations to work out who won the round.
Hang on, at £800, 60. No, point Paul.
Point Paul by a considerable margin. £34 for 40 pieces from Oriental Mart.
When you're doing this kind of maths like I did there, you know, this is high level stuff.
Noodles in bulk, that is.
It's more than I was expecting, to be honest. Considering you can get the sort of the Tesco ones for like 18p. Or you used to when I was in uni anyway, they're probably about £10 now.
Yeah.
Buying noodles in the supermarket, but you're looking at most pretty much like £1 a pack.
Even a super noodle.
Buying in bulk. Yeah. That's what I mean. I'm like, wow.
So there we go.
Right. Okay. Point Paul. Fair
two
play.
2-1 to Paul. Excellent mathsing today, Paul, can I just say?
What I will say is lack of knowledge is such a useful thing for this round. I knew nothing about how much these would cost, so I just said £1.
If Charlotte hadn't played tactically, that would have been a clean sheet. That would have been 3-3. That is it for the week. As always, thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you, Paul and Charlotte, for being my co-pilots on the good ship money saving. We're always keen to hear your top tips and deals for inclusion on the podcast. You can tweet us. You can Instagram message us. Don't slide into our DMs, actually. That's a really weird idea. Unless we know you, in which case, I guess it's fine. Do you know what? Give it a try. Who knows? Maybe we do know you. Or visit the Hot UK Deals Forum to find some tips that you can then share with us and claim as your own, because we don't look at every single post on there. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review it. And if you didn't enjoy it, you have 30 days to return it for a full refund. Terms and conditions apply. We'll be speaking to you next week.